3. Rescue from without. The hero may have to be brought back from his supernatural adventure by assistance from without. That is to say, the world may have to come and get him. For the bliss of the deep abode is not lightly abandoned in favor of the self-scattering of the wakened state. Who, having cast off the world, we read, would desire to return again? He would be only there. And yet, insofar as one is alive, life will call. Society is jealous of those who remain away from it and will come knocking at the door. If the hero, like Muchukunda, is unwilling, the disturber suffers an ugly shock. But on the other hand, if the summoned one is only delayed, sealed in by the beatitude of the state of perfect being, which resembles death, an apparent rescue is effected, and the adventurer returns. When Raven of the Eskimo tale had darted with his fire sticks into the belly of the whale cow, he discovered himself at the entrance of a handsome room, at the farther end of which burned a lamp. He was surprised to see sitting there a beautiful girl. The room was dry and clean, the whale's spine supporting the ceiling, and the ribs forming the walls. From a tube that ran along the backbone, oil dripped slowly into the lamp. When Raven entered the room, the woman looked up and cried, "How did you get here? You are the first man to enter this place." Raven told what he had done, and she bade him take a seat on the opposite side of the room. This woman was the soul, Inua, of the whale. She spread a meal before the visitor, gave him berries and oil, and told him, meanwhile, how she had gathered the berries the year before. Raven remained 4 days as guest of the Inua in the belly of the whale, and during the entire period was trying to ascertain what kind of tube that could be, running along the ceiling. Every time the woman left the room, she forbade him to touch it. But now, when she again went out, he walked over to the lamp, stretched out his claw, and caught on it a big drop, which he licked off with his tongue. It was so sweet that he repeated the act, and then proceeded to catch drop after drop as fast as they fell. Presently, however, his greed found this too slow, and so he reached up, broke off a piece of the tube, and ate it. Hardly had he done so when a great gush of oil poured into the room, extinguished the light, and the chamber itself began to roll heavily back and forth. This rolling went on for 4 days. Raven was almost dead with fatigue and with the terrible noise that stormed around him all the while. But then, everything quieted down, and the room lay still. For Raven had broken one of the heart arteries, and the whale cow had died. The Inua never returned. The body of the whale was washed ashore. But now, Raven was a prisoner. While he pondered what he should do, he heard two men talking, up on the back of the animal, and they decided to summon all the people from the village to help with the whale. Very soon they had cut a hole in the upper part of the great body. When it was large enough, and all the people had gone off with pieces of meat to carry them high up on the shore, Raven stepped out, unnoticed. In many myths of the hero in the whale's belly, he is rescued by birds that peck open the side of his prison. But no sooner had he reached the ground than he remembered he had left his fire sticks within. He took off his coat and mask, and pretty soon the people saw a small black man, wrapped up in a queer animal skin, approaching them. They looked at him curiously. The man offered to help, rolled up his sleeves, and set to work. In a little while, one of the people working in the interior of the whale shouted, "Look what I have found! Fire sticks in the belly of the whale!" Raven said, "My, but this is bad. My daughter once told me that when fire sticks are found inside a whale that people have cut open, many of these people will die. I'm for running. He rolled down his sleeves again and made away. The people hurried to follow his example. And so that was how Raven, who then doubled back, had, for a time, the whole feast to himself. One of the most important and delightful of the myths of the Shinto tradition of Japan, already old when chronicled in the 8th century AD in The Records of Ancient Matters, is that of the drawing forth of the beautiful sun goddess Amaterasu from a heavenly rock dwelling during the critical first period of the world.
Shinto, the way of the gods, the tradition native to the Japanese as distinguished from the imported Butsudo, or way of the Buddha, is a way of devotion to the guardians of life and custom, local spirits, ancestral powers, heroes, the divine king, one's living parents and one's living children, as distinguished from the powers that yield release from the round, bodhisattvas and Buddhas. The way of worship is primarily that of preserving and cultivating purity of heart. What is ablution? It is not merely cleansing the body with holy water, but following the right and moral way. What pleases the deity is virtue and sincerity, not any number of material offerings. Amaterasu, ancestress of the royal house, is the chief divinity of the numerous folk pantheon, yet herself only the highest manifestation of the unseen, transcendent yet immanent, universal god. The 800 myriads of gods are but differing manifestations of one unique deity, Kunitokotachi no Kami, the eternally standing divine being of the earth, the great unity of all things in the universe, the primordial being of heaven and earth, eternally existing from the beginning to the end of the world. What deity does Amaterasu worship in abstinence in the plane of high heaven? She worships her own self within as a deity, endeavoring to cultivate divine virtue in her own person by means of inner purity and thus becoming one with the deity. Since the deity is immanent in all things are to be regarded as divine, from the pots and pans of the kitchen to the emperor. This is Shinto, the way of the gods. The emperor, being in the highest position, receives the greatest reverence, but not reverence different in kind from that bestowed upon all things. The awe-inspiring deity manifests itself even in the single leaf of a tree or a delicate blade of grass. The function of reverence in Shinto is to honor that deity in all things, the function of purity to sustain its manifestation in oneself, following the august model of the divine self-worship of the goddess Amaterasu. With the unseen God who seeth all secret things in the silence, the heart of the man sincere communes from the earth below. From a poem by the Emperor Meiji.
This is an example in which the rescued one is somewhat reluctant. The storm god, Susanoo, the brother of Amaterasu, had been misbehaving inexcusably. And though she had tried every means to appease him and had stretched forgiveness far beyond the limit, he continued to destroy her rice fields and to pollute her institutions. As a final insult, he broke a hole in the top of her weaving hall and let fall through it a heavenly piebald horse which he had flayed with a backward flaying, at sight of which all the ladies of the goddess, who were busily weaving the august garments of the deities, were so much alarmed that they died of fear. Amaterasu, terrified at the sight, retired into a heavenly cave, closed the door behind her, and made it fast. This was a terrible thing for her to do, for the permanent disappearance of the sun would have meant as much as the end of the universe. The end before it had even properly begun. With her disappearance, the whole plain of high heaven and all the central land of reed plains became dark. Evil spirits ran riot through the world. Numerous portents of woe arose, and the voices of the myriad of deities were like unto the flies in the fifth moon as they swarmed. Therefore, the 8 millions of gods assembled in a divine assembly in the bed of the tranquil river of heaven, and bid one of their number, the deity named Thought Includer, to devise a plan. As the result of their consultation, many things of divine efficacy were produced, among them a mirror, a sword, and cloth offerings. A great tree was set up and decorated with jewels. Cocks were brought that they might keep up a perpetual crowing. Bonfires were lit. Grand liturgies were recited. The mirror, 8 feet long, was tied to the middle branches of the tree, and a merry, noisy dance was performed by a young goddess called Uzume. The 8 millions of divinities were so amused that their laughter filled the air, and the plain of high heaven shook. The sun goddess in the cave heard the lively uproar and was amazed. She was curious to know what was going on. Slightly opening the door of the heavenly rock dwelling, she spoke thus from within. I thought that owing to my retirement, the plain of heaven would be dark, and likewise the central land of reed plains would all be dark. How then is it that Uzume makes merry, and that likewise the 8 millions of gods all laugh? Then Uzume spoke, saying, We rejoice and are glad, because there is a deity more illustrious than thine augustness. While she was thus speaking, two of the divinities pushed forward the mirror and respectfully showed it to the sun goddess Amaterasu. Whereupon she, more and more astonished, gradually came forth from the door and gazed upon it. A powerful god took her august hand and drew her out, whereupon another stretched a rope of straw, called the Shimanawa, behind her, across the entrance, saying, Thou must not go back further in than this. Thereupon both the plain of high heaven and the central land of reed plains again were light. The sun may now retreat for a time every night, as does life itself in refreshing sleep. But by the august Shimanawa, she is prevented from disappearing permanently. The motif of the sun as a goddess, instead of as a god, is a rare and precious survival from an archaic, apparently once widely diffused, mythological context. The great maternal divinity of South Arabia is the feminine sun Ilat. The word in German for the sun, die Sonne, is feminine. Throughout Siberia, as well as in North America, scattered stories survive of a female sun. And in the fairy tale of Red Riding Hood, who was eaten by the wolf but rescued from its belly by the hunter, we may have a remote echo of the same adventure as that of Amaterasu. Traces remain in many lands, but only in Japan do we find the once great mythology still effective in civilization, for the emperor is a direct descendant of the grandson of Amaterasu, and as ancestress of the royal house, she is honored as one of the supreme divinities of the national tradition of Shinto. In her adventures may be sensed a different world feeling from that of the now better known mythologies of the solar god, a certain tenderness toward the lovely gift of light, a gentle gratitude for things made visible, such as must once have distinguished the religious mood of many peoples. The mirror, the sword, and the tree we recognize. The mirror, reflecting the goddess and drawing her forth from the august repose of her divine non-manifestation, is symbolic of the world, the field of the reflected image. Therein divinity is pleased to regard its own glory, and this pleasure is itself inducement to the act of manifestation or creation. The sword is the counterpart of the thunderbolt. The tree is the world axis in its wish-fulfilling, fruitful aspect. the same as that displayed in Christian homes at the season of the winter solstice, which is the moment of the rebirth or return of the sun, a joyous custom inherited from the Germanic paganism that has given to the modern German language its feminine Sonne. The dance of Uzume and the uproar of the gods belong to carnival. The world left topsy-turvy by the withdrawal of the supreme divinity, but joyous for the coming renewal. And the Shimenawa, the august rope of straw that was stretched behind the goddess when she reappeared, symbolizes the graciousness of the miracle of the light's return. This Shimenawa is one of the most conspicuous, important, and silently eloquent of the traditional symbols of the folk religion of Japan. Hung above the entrances of the temples, festooned along the streets at the New Year festival, it denotes the renovation of the world at the threshold of the return. If the Christian cross is the most telling symbol of the mythological passage into the abyss of death, the Shimenawa is the simplest sign of the resurrection. The two represent the mystery of the boundary between the worlds, the existent, non-existent line. Amaterasu is an oriental sister of the great Inanna, the supreme goddess of the ancient Sumerian cuneiform temple tablets, whose descent we have already followed into the lower world. Inanna, Ishtar, Astarte, Aphrodite, Venus, those were the names she bore in the successive culture periods of the Occidental development, associated not with the sun, but with the planet that carries her name, and at the same time with the moon, the heavens, and the fruitful earth. In Egypt, she became the goddess of the dog star, Sirius, whose annual reappearance in the sky announced the earth-fructifying flood season of the River Nile. Inanna, it will be remembered, descended from the heavens into the hell region of her sister opposite, the queen of death, Ereshkigal, and she left behind Ninshuber, her messenger, with instructions to rescue her should she not return. She arrived naked before the seven judges. They fastened their eyes upon her. She was turned into a corpse, and the corpse, as we have seen, was hung upon a stake.
After 3 days and three nights had passed, Inanna's messenger, Ninshuber, her messenger of favorable words, her carrier of supporting words, filled the heaven with complaints for her, cried for her in the assembly shrine, rushed about for her in the house of the gods. Like a pauper in a single garment, he dressed for her. To the Ekor, the house of Enlil, all alone he directed his step.
This is the beginning of the rescue of the goddess, and illustrates the case of one who so knew the power of the zone into which she was entering that she took the precaution to have herself aroused. Ninshuber went first to the god Enlil. But the god said that, Inanna, having gone from the great above to the great below, in the netherworld, the decrees of the netherworld should prevail. Ninshuber next went to the god Nanna, but the god said that she had gone from the great above to the great below, and that in the netherworld, the decrees of the netherworld should prevail. Ninshuber went to the god Enki, and the god Enki devised a plan. He fashioned two sexless creatures and entrusted to them the food of life and the water of life, with instructions to proceed to the netherworld and sprinkle this food and water 60 times on Inanna's suspended corpse.
Enlil was the Sumerian air god, Nanna, the moon god, Enki, the water god and god of wisdom. At the time of the composition of our document, 3rd millennium BC, Enlil was the chief divinity of the Sumerian pantheon. He was quick to anger. He was the sender of the flood. Nanna was one of his sons. In the myths, the benign god Enki appears typically in the role of the helper. He is the patron and advisor both of Gilgamesh and of the flood hero Atarhasis Utnapishtim-Noah. The motif of Enki versus Enlil is carried on by classical mythology in the counterplay of Poseidon versus Zeus, Neptune versus Jove.
Upon the corpse hung from a stake, they directed the fear of the rays of fire. 60 times the flood of life, 60 times the water of life, they sprinkled upon it. Inanna arose. Inanna ascends from the netherworld. The Anunnaki fled, and whoever of the netherworld may have descended peacefully to the netherworld, when Inanna ascends from the netherworld, verily the dead hasten ahead of her. Inanna ascends from the netherworld. The small demons, like reeds, the large demons like tablet styluses walked at her side. Who walked in front of her held a staff in hand. Who walked at her side carried a weapon on the loin. They who preceded her, they who preceded Inanna, were beings who know not food, who know not water, who eat not sprinkled flour, who drink not libated wine, who take away the wife from the loins of man, who take away the child from the breast of the nursing mother.
Surrounded by this ghostly, ghastly crowd, Inanna wandered through the land of Sumer from city to city. These three examples from widely separated culture areas, Raven, Amaterasu, and Inanna, sufficiently illustrate the rescue from without. They show, in the final stages of the adventure, the continued operation of the supernatural assisting force that has been attending the elect through the whole course of his ordeal. His consciousness having succumbed, the unconscious nevertheless supplies its own balances, and he is borne back into the world from which he came. Instead of holding to and saving his ego, as in the pattern of the magic flight, he loses it, and yet, through grace, is returned. This brings us to the final crisis of the round, to which the whole miraculous excursion has been but a prelude, that, namely, of the paradoxical, supremely difficult threshold crossing of the hero's return from the mystic realm into the land of common day. Whether rescued from without, driven from within, or gently carried along by the guiding divinities, he has yet to re-enter with his boon the long-forgotten atmosphere where men who are fractions imagine themselves to be complete. He has yet to confront society with his ego-shattering, life-redeeming elixir and take the return blow of reasonable queries, hard resentment, and good people at a loss to comprehend.